You are Locked On Twins, your daily Minnesota Twins podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome to the Locked On Minnesota Twins podcast. Today is Friday, February 19th. I'm your gracious host, Nash Walker, here with Baseball Prospectus's Matt Trueblood. Matt, thanks for joining me. It's been a little bit, but last time we talked, I want to say, were we mid-season? I think we were maybe the Twins were just getting going, and we talked a little bit about how they built the roster. I'm glad we get to do that again today.
Yeah, this front office always gives us something to talk about when it comes to the roster construction, and I mean, they're fielding another winner this year, so.
Yeah, and I do want to ask you about kind of the headliner of baseball this week, and I saw this in your newsletter, and I want you to talk about that newsletter a little bit too. Fernando Tatis Jr., of course, signing that monstrous extension. Some back and forth, I guess, and I don't know how you could look at this and not say that was just a booming success for the league and for just baseball. And did you have a similar feeling? I know your newsletter kind of hinted that you did, but what was your initial reaction? And then when you got a chance to think about it on this extension?
Yeah, no, if I'm guilty of anything when it comes to Fernando Tatis, it's going to be giddiness and overexuberance. And this deal is an absolute just perfect thing for the league, for baseball, for the Padres, for Tatis. I mean, he is the guy, you know, in this mass of really exciting and fun young superstars that we have in the league right now. Ronald Acuna, Mookie Betts, Juan Soto, Mike Trout. There's this long list of great players, really colorful and exciting and historically talented players. I really and truly think Fernando Tatis stands out in that crowd, which is a wild thing to say, but not necessarily from a performance standpoint, but just in terms of what he can do to elevate baseball, you know. And there were people who were worried about, is the league losing something by having this guy locked into the smallish market of San Diego for the next decade and a half? No, because he's going to make San Diego bigger. Mm-hmm. He is going to, you can't contain and sort of bury Fernando Tatis. He is too charismatic, too talented, plays in too exciting a way, is going to elevate his team, is going to continue to be, he's just cool in a way that, you know, Mike Trout is great, phenomenal ball player, much better than Fernando Tatis. He's not cool like Fernando Tatis is. And for the league to permit, even if kind of halfway by accident, people can read more about that in the newsletter that I wrote, but for the league to sort of permit this guy to get paid this amount of money at 22 without having to wait these torturous years of playing the service time manipulation game and waiting till you're close enough to free agency to put a little pressure on the team, for him to get this deal now is really good for the sport, because he is exactly the kind of business that baseball needs to be in right now.
Yeah, I got the chills when I saw it. I mean, I just thought it was so cool. And for him to be 22 years old, I mean, you hit it on the head, I think, when you said he's cool, he's young, he's got that swagger. I mean, I love all of that about him. I think he's phenomenal, and I loved it for sure. And I think on a smaller scale, we look at, I think, the Twins roster, just to tie it in a little bit. I think maybe one of the knocks you can have against the Twins, and I know you kind of mentioned this in your power rankings a few weeks back, I think this before they signed Cruz and Colomé and you know, Simmons maybe even, but I think they lack potentially that superstar face 5-6 win player yearly. And I know that's very difficult to find, right? I mean, that's probably the hardest thing to find, right? That star. But would you agree with that assessment that the Twins lack that true superstar? And if you were to look at someone on this roster or maybe in the minor leagues, who do you think could fill those shoes? Because I do, in my estimation, believe that they lack that.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to be careful not to treat that as too harsh a criticism, because they've emphasized building incredibly impressive depth.
Right.
And not just depth in like that, oh, they're not going to be a disaster even if three people get hurt kind of way, but the guy batting eighth every day would bat fifth for a bunch of teams kind of way. Your fifth or sixth starter would be in the middle of a lot of perfectly respectable rotations kind of way. That's what they have so far done very, very well. And they haven't most of the time since coming online with this new regime been drafting at the front of the first round. The exception to that, obviously, is the one guy that I think you have to point to and say, there's your one chance at getting a true superstar, the kind of guy who clusters a whole bunch of value into one roster spot in Royce Lewis. But it's so sort of unformed at this point. It's so hard to tell whether that's coming because we just haven't gotten a chance to see him progress the way we might have hoped. And the one year where he was healthy enough and there wasn't a pandemic going on, there was this chance for him to really break out. Instead, he was challenged by being pushed to a high level for his age, and he sort of struggled. So we still have a lot to find out about him. So it's maybe a little too early to say, but I think he's the one guy that could really be that game-breaking talent.
And let's look at the shortstop position, because I know Royce told Doogie a couple weeks ago that the Twins have told him he's a shortstop, I guess, repeatedly. The Twins go on sign in Drelton Simmons. When you looked at these three, Matt, I know you were kind of leaning toward Didi Gregorius. You wrote about this at Twins Daily. But what did you ultimately think about Simmons on this deal, knowing what you know about him and his defense and what he brings to the table?
I think it fits really well with the Twins organizational philosophy. You know, and there's when I'm writing sometimes at Twins Daily, I might make a suggestion that I know is very slightly sort of out of sync with what the Twins are thinking, mm-hmm. because, you know, I might not build a roster exactly the way the Twins would. But if I'm assessing them and evaluating them on the strength of executing their game plan, then this was the clear move. Didi Gregorius was in a better position to demand more money. He ultimately got a multi-year deal. And the Twins wanted to stay away from that if they could, just because of the options they have in front of them and the options they want to keep open. Mm-hmm. And Simmons provides a lot of the things that Gregorius would provide, but cheaper, more flexibility. And the Twins don't want to pay to be able to lock a guy into the lineup every day if they're paying a premium just for that and not for increased production as well. Gregorius is more durable and more reliable at this stage of his career than is Andrelton Simmons. But the Twins, I don't want to say they don't care about that. They don't put a premium on those things, durability and reliability. They would rather understand that there's wide variance around everything in baseball, especially this year, but in any year. And instead, they're going to build a roster full of redundancies. They're going to still have Jorge Polanco available to slide over to shortstop, understanding that Royce Lewis could be knocking on the door if he gets off to a good start here in the spring and early summer. They aren't focused on just having one guy who solves one problem on their roster in all but a very small number of cases where that guy does the thing that he's being brought in to do overwhelmingly well, and they can be overwhelmingly confident in him. Otherwise, they're going to stay modular. They're going to stay flexible. That's their strength. It's why they're able to snatch up lots of great deals at, you know, toward the ends of off seasons. It's why their roster was able to weather a bunch of injuries and underperformances last year, because they're never just locked into one person.
And when you look at this, I'm looking at the 40 man and also who's been invited to spring training. I mean, we know that the strength of the Twins is in that depth. Would you say that signing or, you know, claiming Ian Jabeau and Brandon Waddell and Shoemaker for $2 million and all of these under the radar moves, would you say that, you know, has become kind of an overlooked art that the Twins have taken advantage of, that they have this depth? Because in your power rankings, you do mention that they have pitching depth for days. You have high belief in their pickups, or do you have high belief in their ability to develop, or kind of a mixture of both?
I think, yeah, I rarely, when the Twins make a move, the big exceptions were last year, once they finally got Josh Donaldson, which I know I was only the second highest person on that move because you were out there. But when they finally got Josh Donaldson and then the trade for Kenta Maeda, those ones really bowled me over. But most of the time when the Twins make a move, I go, yeah, okay, I see it. But what I really like is that they know what they're looking for. I love the Matt Shoemaker pickup, not because I expect him to be great, but because he's a guy just like they picked up veteran flyers last winter and were able to make them pay off. He fits into what the Twins look for. He's a two fastball guy, the four seamer and the sinker. And although he can't use them totally interchangeably, he has to use them situationally based on handedness, based on count. He can only locate each of them to certain parts of the zone. But when he does throw them, he locates them effectively and consistently to the parts of the zone where he's comfortable throwing each pitch. They love that. That's exactly what they asked Kenta Maeda to do when he came in last year. It's exactly what they've been coaching Jose Berríos up to do. It's what they got Jake Odorizzi doing more effectively after he arrived. He is a split change guy. His changeup is a splitter. The Twins love that. They've been gathering guys. I mean, Maeda's only one very notable example of guys that they brought in who specialize in that pitch over the last few years. He's a guy with a lot of vertical depth on his slider. These are the things that the Twins, you know, it's just checking off boxes.
Right.
And you may not see Matt Shoemaker and think he's a sexy pickup because he's not, and the ceiling is relatively low, but the floor is also relatively high as long as he's able to get on the mound. And the Twins, you can trust them to get in, you know, if you're spreading out the percentile possibilities for Matt Shoemaker, you can probably count on the Twins to get the 70th percentile outcome out of him, because they specialize in and embrace exactly the things that he already kind of does well, and they'll be able to help him hone those things.
BetOnline.ag is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. We got baseball coming up as well. You're going to want in on this action. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to our website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Again, go to betonline.ag. Use promo code LOCKEDON. This platform is very easy to navigate. It's very easy to go through, pick what you want, bet on it. You're not going to want to sit on the sidelines anymore. Again, that's betonline.ag. Use promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Built Bar now has a flash sale for the Coconut Puff Bar. It's a luscious chocolate, a soft marshmallow. It's made with premium collagen protein blend, 16 grams of protein, 130 calories, only 6 grams of sugar. It's gluten-free, it's preservative-free, and it's limited time only. Only a one-day sale at BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. Built Bars are delicious. Built Bars are healthy. I'm skeptical about protein bars. Anytime I try a protein bar, I don't expect it to taste good because a lot of them don't. Built Bars are legitimately delicious. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, and they're great for the health conscious guy like me. I'm a type 1 diabetic, so now anytime I think of having a protein bar or even a candy bar for that matter, I go to BuiltBar.com. I use promo code LOCKEDON and I order it straight from there. Plus right now with that flash sale for the delicious Coconut Puff Bar, you're going to want in on this action and you're going to want in on Built Bars. They really are delicious. They really are healthy. Take advantage of this one-day sale. Order now at BuiltBar.com and use that promo code LOCKEDON. It looks like rosters are pretty much set here, and at least in the AL Central, I think the White Sox are just going to be signing NRIs. The Twins, I think, looks like they're pretty set with 40, and Cleveland as well. As things currently stand, Matt, with everything settled, all the dust is settled. I know Pecota really likes the Twins in the Central again. to take that division and has the White Sox third. In your opinion, who do you think deserves to be the favorite in the division going into 2021?
The Twins. It's close, and I think it's not – it's closer than Kokoda is likely to represent, you know, just because one thing that no projection system effectively captures is injury risk. And while the White Sox are thinner, you know, they would handle a significant slew of injuries less well than the Twins would. The Twins are more likely to suffer more injuries than the White Sox are based on the construction of their roster, the track records of these guys, their ages, all of that stuff. So I think some of those things narrow the gap that is expressed by especially Pecota, but really any projection system. But the Twins are just a better team. They're a little bit deeper. You can count on, you know, Pecota does not like, and neither do I, Dylan Cease or Michael Kopech as guys that the White Sox have to count on in the back half of their rotation. Pecota does not like, and neither do I, most of the Cleveland outfield picture beyond Eddie Rosario. So, you know, I think there are a lot of ways that one of those two teams could sneak past the Twins, but the balance of probability, I think Pecota gives the Twins a 60-something, low 60s% chance to win the division. I think that's about right. And then you split the rest between Cleveland and Chicago, and you say that may not sound like, oh, the Twins are overwhelming favorites, because they're not, but they are clear favorites.
I think the ability for this team and in the front office to kind of weather a storm a little bit, as a lot of the White Sox, you know, position players and even pitchers are in front halves of their extensions, right? And the White Sox are able to add because Moncada and Jimenez and Anderson are not making much, and they've been able to add some significant pieces. So I think it would be a big accomplishment for the Twins to kind of fend them off here in the next couple of years. But I mean, we just look and the Twins are trying to win the World Series, right? And I think the sense here is they weren't aggressive enough, at least from some. They weren't aggressive enough this offseason to make you feel comfortable in the top half of the rotation or the top half of the roster to make a deep run in the postseason. There's always the trade deadline, of course, and they're hoping prospects come up. But Matt, do you think they're kind of taking a gamble if this roster was to be the one and relatively healthy going into October, riding an 18-game postseason streak? Should they have been more aggressive in trying to get Blake Snell or Yu Darvish? What was your view of that?
I think they could have been, but I think, you know, it's easy to say with hindsight, well, look at what San Diego actually had to give up for Yu Darvish. The Twins could have beaten that package and none of us would have flinched too much. But there are, you can't necessarily assume that offer is exactly what the Twins had to beat,
right?
If they were involved in the discussions at all. And it looks different coming from the Twins too, because the Padres are very, very good at international scouting and piling up a bunch of talented Latin American teenagers who they can sort of use as trade capital. Well, the Twins aren't bad at that. They're improving, they're developing that arm of their operation. But I think they're not quite as deep in those areas as San Diego. So they may not have felt like they could expend the same capital just in terms of volume and still have the depth that, again, they prized. They didn't necessarily want to build a roster the way AJ Preller has built a roster in San Diego. Now, if you knew that it was going to come out the way it has for AJ Preller, every team would like to do that, because that is a beautiful, in addition to a dominant roster, it's just a gorgeous thing. Mm-hmm. But without a lot of star power in-house that they could necessarily rely on, they have to emphasize depth. And that's what they've done well. They want to make sure they're not out over their skis. They have this sort of prospect glut nudging up, and we probably would have seen more of it leak into the majors last year if we'd had a full season. We're certainly going to see some of that this year with Yoan Duran and Jordan Belozovic and really Lewis and Kirilloff and Larnach. These guys are finally, that dam's going to kind of break. Mm-hmm. And then we're all going to, I think, be glad that they held on to those guys, because most of what was out there that they could have acquired instead, including this year's free agent class, just didn't quite line up with their needs and sort of their, what would have created more distance between them and the White Sox.
Is it fair to say that they've blown a little bit of an opportunity? I mean, I think on a micro scale, absolutely. But how wide do you think that statement goes, that they've blown an opportunity with this current core, Buxton, Sano, Kepler, Polanco, these guys right now before this next wave came? Is it fair to say that?
You know, I think I would probably frame it differently. And this is the front office didn't blow anything by not building a better unit around that core, because they built a pretty good unit around that core in Nelson Cruz and Jake Odorizzi and Kenta Maeda. And really, to the extent that they haven't quite done what they could have over the last 2 years, in October especially, with those guys, it's kind of because of those guys. Not saying that, you know, they're fully disappointing, because I think they've all kind of hit their median outcomes as players at this point. But none of them have overachieved what you would have hoped for from them 5 years ago, except maybe Max Kepler. They're flawed players. They're just flawed players. Byron Buxton can't hit to the opposite field and goes through stretches where he doesn't know a ball from a strike. And Miguel Sano, we know about the many limitations there. And Jorge Polanco turned out not to really be a shortstop and lost all his power because he got hurt and couldn't really play through it. It's not like you blame those players for not having gone farther, because it's, you know, it's, they were doing their best, but they just weren't quite as good of players as maybe we hoped they would be. If you're spreading out those percentiles, none of those guys hit their 80th percentile, which is what you would have needed for them to really take off and carry the team deeper into the playoffs.
And that's what's exciting about the next wave is we hope that some of these guys, like Lewis, you mentioned earlier, and Kirilov.
Absolutely. Because isn't this team, I mean, another part of that is all those guys were brought in by previous regimes and primarily developed by the previous regime.
Right.
And we believe with a lot of good evidence that this regime is much better at player development from intake up to the major league level than that regime was. So I think we have good reason to hope that a couple of these 5-6 guys who are now the younger wave are going to hit that level. And that's when you can really start winning games in October.
I want to ask you, so let's get to these power rankings. Dodgers 1, Padres 2. I don't want to give away the whole thing, but I know Yanks you have as the top of the American League. I mean, I think the National League's a lot deeper. Do you think it's wise to say that the American League is fairly wide open in the playoffs and will present a good opportunity for the Twins?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at this point, there's no sort of scary juggernaut out West. There's only the Yankees that you'd really be, I don't even want to say afraid of, but of course, well, if you're a certain kind of Twins fan, you are afraid of the Yankees in the playoffs, and perfectly good reason.
Yeah.
But in general, the American League's good teams all have clear flaws. And the Twins really don't have a clear flaw. They just don't have the standout strengths that some of those teams, you know, hope that they have. So I don't see a reason why they can't push further into October this year. If, and you know, this is where we say the playoffs are a crapshoot. One way in which they are a crapshoot is, do you get to October healthy?
Right.
They really haven't in either of the last 2 years. It was this limping crew of guys who were playing hurt or couldn't play at all. And if that happens again, then they'll flame out and be swept again in the division series. But part of continuing to sign guys like Simmons and even guys like Matt Shoemaker and just amass this depth is you can give more days off during the season. You can be very careful and very conscious. And hopefully one of these times you're going to get to October and you're going to have a couple of guys hot and everybody healthy. And that's when it breaks. It's not necessarily about being better or worse. It's not necessarily about finally clearing the juggernauts out of the way, but that part has kind of happened for the Twins at this point. You don't have to fear the Astros or the A's coming out of the West. You're not quaking in your boots over the Blue Jays or the Rays or Cleveland. You know, those teams have sort of come out to where they're going to be. They're more like 90 win teams. And if the Twins hit their 60th percentile projection for this year, they're going to be the favorites in whatever their first round playoff matchup is. And once you win one playoff round, it feels like you're cruising, right?
Right. I want to ask you this before I let you go, Matt. I know 2020, the baseball season, you and I kind of discussed this. So I want to say we talked before the season started about how we kind of viewed the season. And, you know, for me, it was easy. I got excited about it, but of course it wasn't the same. It was nowhere near the same what we're used to. And I know you kind of went back and forth, and internally I did as well. But, you know, hosting the podcast 5 days a week too, I bought in completely to the 60 games. How do you view this upcoming season as things look better, you know, with numbers and such with COVID? And, you know, I know there was some skepticism about the 60 game season and whether that should have been played. How do you view baseball going into this year as we're 40 days from opening day?
Yeah, we aren't wrestling with it as much as I kind of wish we still were, although I know it becomes a tedious conversation at a certain point. Like, I am a guy who believes that not refusing to shut down sports or shutting them down, but then opening them back up before you open up almost anything else, sent a wrong-headed mixed message to the nation and sort of encouraged people to press for normalcy before normalcy was possible, and elongated and worsened this whole thing. I wish that they hadn't played last year, and I wish that the NFL hadn't played its season, and I wish the NBA had just shut down and not come back until, honestly, well, the way things are going for the NBA right now, maybe they still shouldn't be back.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, you know, I have a lot of optimism about the next several weeks in terms of vaccinations, sort of a coherent COVID response that's going to allow us to play this season safely. It's still going to feel really weird for at least the first half of the season. And I don't like playing baseball when it's really weird. I don't like, you know, that I probably won't be in a ballpark before Independence Day. And I don't like that we're going to have to deal with cardboard cutouts again. Or if we don't, then we're going to have to be watching and constantly going, oh, it's uncomfortable to me how close those people are sitting to each other. But we are reaching a point where I'm more okay with this is a type of activity we can return to safely, probably not during spring training. And I'll have deep reservations about that, but by opening day, and certainly when you get around Memorial Day, I'm going to be glad that they're playing. But it's going to continue to feel strange. And maybe that's okay, because we need to sort of carry that strangeness around with us and not rush back to normalcy and forget what we hopefully have learned over the last year.
Yep. Matt Trueblood, Baseball Prospectus. Matt, where can Twins fans sign up for your newsletter, which is fantastic? I think I've been subscribed for about a year, but how can people do that? And then, I mean, everyone, if you're listening, you know who Matt Trueblood is at Baseball Prospectus, but how can people find you on the Penning Bowl?
Yeah, well, I'm on Twitter at MA Trueblood. I write at Baseball Prospectus. As you said, I write at Twins Daily, not a lot lately, but I'm going to be getting back into that. Had to get some projects out of the way. If you are excited about the season or want to feel more excited about the upcoming season, I have pieces in two MLB preview magazines that are out on newsstands right now, Lindy Sports MLB Preview and the Athlon Sports MLB Preview. In the latter, in addition to a few features, I also wrote the Twins team preview. So you can check those out. You can find those at the grocery store, the pharmacy. You've probably seen them around.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, my email newsletter is Penning Bull. You can sign up at penningbull.com. It's just $11.11 a year. And a portion of that goes to charities too. So a lot of different ways. I write a lot. You'll have no problem finding me if you, for whatever reason, want to.
The Swiss Army knife, Matt Trueblood. Thanks so much, Matt. We'll talk again soon.
Always a pleasure.